Smashing. Okay, I just before I jump in, I just wanted to follow up on both what Tim and Alan have been saying. In New Zealand, we have a fantastic example in this community of open source, of open data, of mashups, of coming together and the power of information, and it's the broadband map, the National Telecommunications Broadband Map at broadbandmap.gov.nz. If you don't know, go and have a look at it just now. It's basically some great work where the industry's come together, given out all of their fibre maps, their coverage information, their service information. It's a Google Maps API on the other side of it, and it's out there just now. You can go on, you can plot your demand as a business or as a consumer, and it has all the state sector demand points around the country entered into it. So I think it's a fantastic example of the power of information at work. Okay, but what am I going to be talking about? Look, first of all, thanks to the Commerce Commission for pulling this together. I think it's great to see them taking a proactive approach to leading a debate in this space. And too often, I guess, the arguments have been retrospective around regulation, about infrastructure, and maybe the arguments haven't been enough about looking forward, as Tim said as well, about connectivity, around communication, around collaboration. If New Zealand is going to survive in an increasingly carbon-constrained global economy, we have to be world-leading at advanced telecommunications. And I guess for my portion of today, I'd like to explore what lies beyond the large IP networks that we're all looking to implement. You know, NGNs, it's MPLS, it's large IP cores. Yeah, well, it might be right now, but I'm not convinced it's going to be that forever. And I guess we might need to just have a little look over the horizon to get a sense of what might be coming so that we don't make business model decisions and regulatory decisions today that could lead us down a blockage or a wrong path. So why listen to me? Well, certainly not because it's me, okay? But because of the community I work in, we work in this research and education environment. For those that don't know about Karen, just go to karen.net.nz and have a look. Or there's a Google Tech Talk video still available on YouTube I did about this time last year that will give you the full lowdown. But the key thing is that it allows exploration. These research and education networks allow us to explore ideas and innovate around infrastructure and the applications and services that are going to sit on top of them, without being constrained by the need to drive a short-term ROI on investment. So if it's in a sense, it's a subsidy into innovation for the future. It allows for many failures, for sure, and failures happen all the time, that's good, but it also allows for a few startling successes, successes that actually can change the course of humanity. Let's look at where our community has gone and where the rest of the world has followed. Anyone recognize that diagram? It's got to be somebody. It is the ARPANET, and it's the first three nodes of ARPANET, 1969, the implementations of TCP/IP coming out of that. That was our community that started that sort of stuff. And I would argue the internet's been relatively successful, but probably wouldn't have been invested in by the private sector in the early stages. Now, big thumbs up to anyone who can read that one. Nope. I'll give you a clue. It's the top right-hand corner says March 1989, and it says Tim Berners-Lee. That's the front page of the internal memorandum that Tim Berners-Lee submitted to the CERN people about how they're going to manage their infrastructure from their last upgrade in colliders. Yeah, we got the World Wide Web out of that. But that was then. What's coming up now? Well, there's an argument that says we've got lots of fiber all over the world now. We've got great NGNs going in. We've got Ethernet happening. We've got gigabit connectivity. The problem's solved. Donald, go away. You know, you're just sort of, you know, making a case for yourself. Not sure the problem is solved. There's the challenge of how we use that fiber and how we use it across heterogeneous network domains that's really big and it's really growing. The Large Hadron Collider, this is the ATLAS experiment at CERN. A lot of you probably seen that picture. I think it's up and running now. They had a false start last year. I think it's up and running again at least a low level. That's going to generate 15 petabytes of data a year. Now, 15 petabytes of data is quite a lot. They've had to build an entire new distributed computing architecture to try and handle that data. And that's been done over the last 10 years. Almost an important part of the project of the LHC has been the LHC grid to actually handle the data flows coming off it. It's split into tiers. So they've got tier zero, the creation of the data. They throw a lot of it away. Then it goes to tier one sites around the world, tier two and tier three sites for processing and storage and management and visualization and ongoing architecture. So the only way that data is actually going to be put around the world is on a network of dedicated optical circuits. So the latency requirements, just the ability to move that size of data, especially when we've actually had to create this global optical grid of networking to support the LHC. Here's another thing, astronomy. The physicists always love their big networks. This is a couple of years old now, and it's a multiple 1 gigabit stream electronic very long baseline interferometer experiment, which basically brings together telescopes from different places. They're all looking at the same place in the sky. You get much better resolution when you have a longer baseline, and you have to correlate them in real time. So a couple of years ago, it was a gig. You think, well, that's okay, Donald. You've got, 10 gigs nationally. You can handle that. We've almost got a telescope up at Warkworth, and there's one down in Invercargill. Well, I don't quite have a gig or 10 gigs internationally, and, that may change. But the challenge I've got again is that come 2011, the baseline standard for those streams is going to go to 8 gigabits a second. Okay, so it sort of ups the challenge a little bit in terms of how you're going to handle this stuff. They're spread around the world. They're sometimes spread around space as well, and we're not going to go there today, but sometimes to get that interferometry footprint, you actually go extraterrestrial as well. But the only way to collate 8 gigabit second streams, even with 40 gig Ethernet coming in, is through optical circuits and dedicated optical light paths. Today on Karen, some of you may or may not know, we're multicast streaming all the country's free-to-air TV and radio stations. So if you want to check out IPTV, it's been working for the past few months on Karen, and thanks to Telstra Clear for that as well, and coming and being a pretty innovative partner there. The HD channels take 10 to 15 megabits per second, and that's to your desktop, right? So 10 to 15 jitter-free, latency-free megabit per second to your desktop is what you need to watch a compressed HD signal. Top of the page there, that's going from little mobile phones right up to 1080p resolution. So that's sort of showing you the different sizes of resolutions. Well, that's okay, good. Anyone know what an uncompressed HD signal runs at? Apart from these guys. Uncompressed HD? 1.2 gigabits per second. Sorry, Brian, well done. Why bother with uncompressed? Because you can compress it, you maybe lose half a second, you've got some latency, some codecing stuff. Well, if you're trying to do live telesurgery, I'd kind of want that half a second to be spent differently. It is important. Music performances, okay? Financial information transfers, large amounts of volume, you have to get latency at the networks, and compressing things is a reaction to scarce bandwidth. Sometimes, though, 1080p is just not enough. I mean, has anyone ever turned down that extra big desktop monitor that, your IT department's trying to give you? No, right? Has someone ever gone into a camera shop and gone, no, I don't want more megapixels on my digital camera this year. I'm happy with the smaller one. There's just something about more information. We have insatiable appetites, and especially visual information being human beings. And there's a move to 4K, so that's 4,000 pixel approximately, digital cinema. Now, 4,000, that's a 4096 by 2160 pixels, which is around 8.8 megapixels. So you think, well, 4K, that's digital cinema, that's four times the size of 1080p at home today. Okay, it's only 8.8 megapixels per frame, so it's not that outrageous resolution. But that uncompressed with the overheads and everything, it's about a 6 gigabit per second feed. So, today's stuff we're getting up to is actually getting quite large. Recently, there's been some experiments. There was just one, I think, late last year, early this coming year, of super high vision, Japanese name, 16 times HD, right? 22-channel surround sound. I don't know what they're trying to do. 22 channels, a lot of channels. I saw the microphone. The microphone's like this hedgehog. It sticks with microphones anyway. 33 megapixels per frame. 30 to 60 frames a second. With the 22 channels of surround sound, can anyone remember that data stream volume? Prize for the winner. No? How much? Oh, no, that's a bit keen. 24 gigabits a second, right? So it was a 24 gigabit uncompressed stream that was producing. And even compressed, that was well over a gig. So I guess what we're saying is that in our world where we live at the front end of these applications, which I'm trying to say, maybe there is some relevance to us in the next 5 or 10 years, there's a massive step change in bandwidth coming. Basically, I don't think IP networks are going to cut it, right, as they are today. Why do I think that? Even with 10 gigabit pipes, right, routinely coming out there into the marketplace, 40 gigs being deployed and 100 gigs in the lab, there's been some good experiments on 100 gig Ethernet cards going over DWDM recently. why am I saying that this isn't going to work, right? Why can't we just throw these bigger IP pipes up, upgrade the core, put some new cards in? Well, I guess, well, IP networks provide always-on services, which is fantastic, but we've heard today already several times, they can't guarantee quality, okay? There's this data loss at bottlenecks or handovers between networks. And when it comes to bulk transfers of data, you know, streaming large amounts, especially if you have to correlate or have real-time interactions, when you get up to these big, big data flows, it's hard. It's just too hard. And most of that is due to the fact you've got heterogeneous network environments, okay, on the end-to-end path. So if you're actually trying to manage, you're trying to drive large data volumes across IP networks, even within your own, when you control it all, it's hard. Right? I mean, some of our customers, the big universities, struggle, right, to get above 500 megabits a second throughput through Karen. And some of them are connected at 1 gig or 10 gigs. So just managing the tuning of the stacks, the servers, the switches, the firewalls, the routing protocols, BGP falls down, it ain't easy to actually use a gigabit connection. It is not easy. And it's especially not easy when you're trying to have really large data loads going through it as well, even with things like jumbo frames on. And that's my last point there. It's just, we're finding, and some of our members have found, that managing routing and all that associated IP infrastructure and Ethernet infrastructure around large end-to-end performance setups is just getting too hard. So, what do we do? Well, I guess it's a fair challenge to ask me. You're standing up here saying there's these big experiments and you know, what's happening in your community? What, you know, give me some data, Donald, to back this up. Well, here, this is some data source from Terrena. Terrena is the European Research and Education Network Association. So this is most of the big European and some of the other big global networks, similar to Karen. Now, this is general IP traffic growth. It's around about 40 to 50% a year, and that's around about the rate that the commodity internet traffic generally is growing at these last few years. Okay, well, that's not that impressive, and that actually sort of undermines my argument, because the actual traffic on our networks is growing about the same as the rest of the internet. However, over the last 2 to 3 years, there's been an enormous growth in point-to-point optical circuit links. Okay? So basically what's happening in our community to drive and support all these usages and these experiments is big demand is switching, and it's coming off the shared IP networks, and it's going towards the transmission layer. What's the end goal of this sort of activity? You know, no one, is everyone going to have their own sort of colors for every single application? Probably not, okay? And I think the optimal position is we're looking to combine right now the best of both worlds. So historically, we've had the POTS, the PSTN, dedicated paths, okay? Your throughput was directly proportional to the terminal kit you put on each end and the number of tie lines that you'd set up. Relatively easy to manage once it's up. I not being a copper network engineer, I wouldn't know. A little bit harder to change once you've got it set up. Okay, so I guess if I make a broad generalization, higher CapEx, lower OpEx. We then go into wonderful IP, so there's packets, packet clearinghouses, that's not an advert for PCH. Flexible paths, the throughput on that network, actually though we feel when it's getting to large volumes is becoming directly proportional to the management effort you put into it. Okay, relatively easy to set up, harder to scale when you get to big data volumes, lower CapEx, but we're seeing an increasingly higher OpEx to make these things work well. Okay, and I think, you know, Tim, the efforts that BT have gone into is to try and streamline that again has been part of it, but even when you get to a simple network, just managing large data flows gets complex, and the stuff that JP's been doing around trying to open up the network is, you know, amazing. And then where do we go to next? Well, dedicated paths again. An optical network gives you a dedicated path. The throughput now, again, you go back to being directly proportional to the terminal kit, the optics you put on each end, and the number of wavelengths you have set up. Relatively easy to set up and manage, hopefully. Not quite there yet. I'll show you where we are. And the goal there is, and it's a little bit, I'm pushing forward, I'm looking at a little bit here, but lower CapEx and lower OpEx. So maybe where we're going to is we can combine the best of both worlds. I'll speed up through some of the rest of this stuff. Cost curve and control, the key variables that we're looking for here. I'm told key is a word you actually can't use in Wellington anymore. You've got to say vital or crucial. IP is just getting too expensive, okay? So, $1 to transmit on the photonic layer, $10 to switch it, $100 to fully route it. That's roughly for the same volume of data, you're looking at that level of cost incrementation. So you want to really match the service to the data type and the data volume. DWDM lasers, still pretty pricey, especially for long reaches. Prices are coming down, and it's this control plane. The control plane for heterogeneous network control is still developing, but that's where the effort's going in right now. Talked about matching the traffic there, and really, what's the business model impacts of this sort of stuff? I don't know your businesses well enough, but my guess is that it's got to be a shift from selling and managing high-value upper-layer services like traditional QoS to actually exposing and enabling and selling a build-your-own networks, a build-your-own customer service approach. And I think BT are a global leader in this area. It's network as a service. Okay, it's not just software as a service or applications as a service, it's network as a service. And it's enabling your customers to be able to go into your networks and maybe use your billing system or provision something on your network that beforehand you'd have had control over. And it's about saying, we're going to open that up and allow people to innovate on top. A little bit about QoS. Everyone's had a shot at QoS today. Here's my take. Today, QoS, I think, is destructive. Okay, you have a link or a wavelength, and you say, okay, well, some of you are going to pay for slightly better access. Well, actually, what happens is you sort of degrade the whole quality first by putting QoS on it, and then you re-upgrade a few of those people who have paid for a little bit extra. And the rest of the people are left with, you know, less of a service. Well, that's okay, maybe. What about a different approach to QoS? Okay, quality is a constructive quality of service. You got a Lightwave, you got a Lambda, just add a new one. Not that expensive. Move the people who were, you know, chunking up your shared IP pipe onto that new wavelength, they're pretty happy, and the people you leave behind, well, they're pretty happy too. Not that expensive to do these days, getting easier. And look, I guess, just in case you have any doubt where our hearts lie in our community, sort of visual indication there. Okay, relevance to consumer and business markets. So, you know, is this going to work for people? What's the consumer in 5 years? Why is this relevant to me, right, or me when I'm a granddad? I think you're going to have a local pop. Your school or your library or somebody commercially in your area is going to offer a local internet exchange. I'm going to own my fiber to that exchange, and I'm going to provision waves on demand through a web browser. I'll take an IP service. That'll be like an internet channel, a CB channel 16, you know, anything out there advertising to me. I'm going to say I want some health services, I'm going to want some video, some gaming, some home office services, some cloud computing, some cloud storage. And I'm just going to set up a new wavelength every time to the POP to pick up those services on dedicated channels, just as 10 years ago I got a second line for my fax, right? Just as I got a separate DSL connection over my analog connection. Businesses, already in countries that are deployed on their R&E space, these networks, a lot of their members are swapping out their core IP WAN connections for core Lightpath connections. So the WAN is going to get replaced by an optical WAN. And you're going to just get separate Lightpaths. It'll be easier to have a separate color for disaster recovery, a separate color for immersive video communications, a separate color for sensitive information or for your commodity services. So it's just going to be easier and cheaper if we get this right to do it this way. Right, last little quiz. Valid question to ask is, are we going to need this? Or am I just got, you know, my head in the sky and fingers up my rectum? I often don't do that. Let's look back at history. That's bad, sorry. Didn't mean to say that loud. Okay, 1990, 1991. Janet, who's our namesake in the UK, lovely girl. She's been around for 20 years. We're a little bit younger, a little bit fresher. Janet implemented the world's fastest X25 network. Okay, it's quiz time. What was the backbone speed of the Janet X25 network when it got implemented in 91-ish? Ooh, it was actually more. It was more. This happy chappy, right? And I could be wrong, we could be maybe talking different phases in its life cycle. The X25, well, I read that it was 8 megabits a second. So I could be wrong. I'm sorry, was that 92, the Mercury circuits? Okay, well, it was 2, so there we go. You get an extra prize. Really? That's amazing. That's awesome. I'm so pleased that Wikipedia was wrong. All right, look, so very quickly, how far away is this? What's going on? Already 15 RNE networks around the world have deployed hybrid optical packet solutions. So they're running large IP pipes alongside an ability to stand up dedicated circuits, usually optical circuits. Two big efforts going on, the Internet two-led effort, which is called DCN, Dynamic Circuit Networks. And this, they love their acronyms, they love their mnemonics, sorry. This combines Oscars and Dragon. Now, I have this copy down. I'm bloody going to read it to you anyway. Right, OSCAR stands for On-Demand Secure Circuits and Advanced Reservation System. Dragon stands for Dynamic Resource Allocation via Optical Networks. Okay, Autobahn, who knows, it's probably just some... it doesn't stand for anything. Basically, but both of them are trying to introduce this control plane software, okay, that makes it easy to solve the problem of working across domains and setting up these end-to-end circuits. This graph doesn't have a lot of the Asian countries on. Australia's playing this game now. So is the Japanese, the Chinese, the Thai networks, the Korean networks. They're all moving here. So these are the people that are running these global optical networks. Goals there, that's global optical light exchanges. So, you know, stuff's starting to happen. It's starting to emerge. For those of you of interest, this is the sort of challenge they're trying to solve. They're trying to say, okay, if I've got to get from one end to another, I don't know exactly how someone's going to have architected that network in between. But if I want to have an ability to maybe take the most appropriate or maybe the lowest level service option and provision myself an end-to-end circuit when I don't own that infrastructure. Okay, and that's critically important. Thank you. Last very bit of slide. This is Oscars. I actually went online and you won't see the detail, but basically you can step through here. I entered the point that I wanted to go from, the point I wanted to go to. I asked for 100 megabits and I asked for it for 4 minutes. Wasn't feeling greedy. It went away and said, oh, I'm working on it. Set up a VLAN this time because it reckoned I needed 100 meg. And there we go. So literally less than a minute later, I have all the detail, I have the VLAN ID tag, and I can go and work on my VLAN now for the next 4 minutes. And if I'm finished with it, I can tear it down ahead of time. But this gave me a big kick, actually, because I don't know if you can see there, it says extreme caution. I'll just read that out to you. Managed network, extreme caution, as well as extensive understanding of the software suite is advised. Yeah. So I just pressed yes. And Internet 2 is still working, so I don't know. It's pretty good. All right, last slide. Watch this space. Okay, what's going to be happening next for us in New Zealand? Karen 2.0 coming out in December 2010. We will be introducing a hybrid optical packet network. One of our challenges is to be able to introduce that with the New Zealand supplier market. We don't implement our own networks. All we do is we work and try and buy them from the marketplace. So there's a heads up to anyone in the room who might be interested in getting into this space come 2010. And in the community globally, the next challenge is moving from point-to-point circuits to actually implementing fully switched optical networks. And work on that is underway in several places. So I think if I'm looking beyond the horizon, that's where that's going to go to. Thanks, everyone.